Hey everybody, welcome to another week of the Soccer Thread Podcast. I'm Dan Schrader. I am in frigid Beaverton, Oregon, where the furnaces do not work. It's good for the computers though. Keeps them cold and running fast. So
you can run all the algorithms you've been wanting to run.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because of said furnace issues, we do not have Ryan Palmer in the studio, but he's calling in from Portland proper. What's up, Ryan?
Yeah, this is a sad pod. I'm sad that I'm not in Beaverton Podcast Studios, and I just watched the United Spurs game, which I'm sure we'll get onto, but I'm not in a good mood, not in a good mood.
What if we just didn't talk about that game this week?
That I would prefer that, actually.
You just didn't have enough layers to be able to stand it there in Beaverton.
We really should have just pretended we recorded this game at the normal time, or this pod at the normal time, before the game happened.
Yeah.
So I could be much happier.
Yep. Cliff, edit that part in somehow.
Mike Samuelson is in Los Angeles.
I was planning on airing some behind the scenes thread drama that happened on the text thread yesterday. But I've been told that's quote family business and I'm not allowed to share that. I'm just going to say hello to the listeners.
Yeah. This podcast is crumbling at its core right now. I'm worried about this.
People who used to look forward to snuggling together may not be snuggling together. That's all I'm saying.
It's chinchillas in the bed. That's all I'm saying.
Look, I got nothing to say. Colin Smith.
Dramatic pause.
In the swamp. Colin Smith.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yep, I'm in the swamp. You know, it's a tough week for me. You know, I didn't get paid on a bet. Still looking forward to that. But, I'm ready to do this podcast. I'm ready to do this.
Can we just put this out there? I mean, let's just put this out there, guys. Come on.
All right, do it, Mike.
You do it, tough guy.
Mike, you wanted to do it.
All right, I'll do it. I'll do it. I don't know why I said that. I'm just getting saucy because Palmer's saucy.
I wish some of this heat was in my studio right now. I'm freezing.
I bet Dan, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, that Pogba would play more than maybe 30 or 60 minutes.
60, I think.
60 minutes for United before he, you know, in the rest of his career, because at the time Mourinho was still managing and not playing Pogba. I think he hadn't played for like 4 games in a row. So Dan said, yeah, under 60 minutes. I said over. Dan lost that bet, obviously, because Mourinho got fired about 2 or 3 days later.
I think like the following day.
Yeah, so maybe the following day. Yeah, Pogba immediately played 90 minutes in the next match. Of course, you know, that made Dan a little salty. He lost the bet. He sent me, our bets are always that the one person, the loser has to buy the winner a pair of socks.
Which
happened.
Which happened.
He bought me a pair of socks. He sent me a pair of socks, a pair of Liverpool FC socks. So, you know, I said that was invalid currency. It's like going to a cash only establishment and trying to pay with Swedish kroner in America. They're just not going to take your cash. So I just have said, I'm not taking these socks. You knew they were invalid. You knew I didn't want them. You knew these aren't the socks I'm looking for as my winnings. So Dan and I are currently beefing.
I think Colin is a humorless bore and can't.
This is clearly a
gag.
You can say I have a bad sense of humor, but you can't say I have no sense of humor because I just did a complete joke for our last draft. Well, you all picked very serious 3-on-3 teams.
Humorless. Absolutely.
I mean, that joke was not funny at all.
That's the baseline for a sense of humor. I did a joke last draft, guys. I have a sense of humor.
I did a joke once, all right?
So Colin and I are mad at each other. There you go. We've aired our dirty laundry. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Mommy and Daddy still love each other. They're just mad.
Now I'm mad at Mike for bringing it up. Palmer's the only one I still love.
Palmer's just mad at the world right now because of the game that hasn't happened yet.
If Dan still loves me, then I think everything is okay.
That's right. Let's do a little draft. We got a request this week from Scotty P that we draft kind of a best 11 in the world of retired players over the age of 40 that are not dead.
I think they have to be alive. Can I recuse myself from this draft? I don't want to.
So this is like in their current if you're playing a testimonial, you're bringing in your best 11 guys. They have to be retired, and they have to be, like, you know, over 40. So not very, very recently retired. Palmer and I did not prepare for this. So what we're going to do is let Mike and Colin draft at each position. Palmer and I will choose which player, Mike's or Colin's, we like better. Put together the 11, and Colin or Mike, whoever gets more players into that 11 by the end of the draft, wins the draft. We are going to use a formation that we're going to call a 4-5-1. But the two outside guys can be pretty forward, you know, thinking. So if you want it more of a 4-3-3 type idea, that's fine. But we're not taking two out and out strikers. All right. That's what I'm saying. That's a very non-modern formation. We're not doing that. We're just not doing it.
I've got a lot of Dutch players in my team, so there's going to be a lot of tactical flexibility.
Nice.
I mean, that's fine.
Total football. We're making the team, Mike. We're just building around total football.
Just better not be two Robin Van Persies. That's all. So he looks like he's over 40, by the way. He might be eligible for this draft.
He's got that salt and pepper hair. Yeah. Looks good.
He's still
like
active
that.
Player.
I don't think he's retired, yeah. Yeah.
Is he? Oh, all right.
There's definitely a couple old guys who I was like looking forward to picking, and then I was like, oh, they're still plying their trade somewhere.
Keepers are tough.
I'm so
they're
glad
all
that
still
you guys
playing.
Did some research.
Yeah, for the record, my strategy for this draft, until I decided I didn't want to do it, was just going to be to pick a bunch of retired Liverpool guys to piss Colin off.
Kenny Dalglish.
My initial strategy was to try to find people who are teetotalers who don't drink, but that proved harder to do than I thought. I could only find list of current players, which was not helpful.
All right, so 4-5-1. Let's start at the back. Goalkeeper, Colin, who is your suggestion?
I wanted to go last for goalkeeper, but that's fine. I just wanted to do it last because I had a wild card pick that I wanted to put there.
We can start at the top. You want to start with strikers? I don't care.
No, we can start in the back. I'll take Brad Friedel. He played until he was very old. He's 45 now, but he played until he was like 41. Or something. Yeah. And he's still involved in football. He's the coach of the New England Revolution. So, you know, he's still involved in the game. He's not going to be a liability back there because he knows how to play as an old man.
Mike, who's your choice?
I've got Oliver Kahn. He's got a huge face, which
would have saved that one last week.
I just think
he does have a really big face.
Yeah. I just think people are going to respect that. And he's German. He likes order. He'll help organize the team. He's a very angry person, I feel like. I feel like a lot of keepers are pretty angry, and as you get older, you're going to get even angrier.
Yeah.
So I think all these things are going to help my team.
Definitely a red card liability, but I like the pick.
Palmer, as the goalkeeping expert, who are you taking?
Well, I'm going to take Brad Friedel, mainly because he has a weird accent.
I was going to say the same thing.
I'm in on that.
That's such a homer pick.
He can talk to both the American and British players in the lineup.
For Colin. I guess I got to keep track of who's picking what here. Center defenders, Mike. Choose. Should we do singles, or are you taking a pair of center defenders together?
Yeah, pair would be quicker. Let's
okay.
do this.
All right, I've got Nesta and Maldini. They played together for AC Milan.
Maldini, not a center defender.
He played center back at points in his career. He was all over the back line. The benefits of taking them also is AC Milan is very famous for having this like sports science academy where they just like keep players going. Both those guys are going to be in really good shape. Maldini actually, I learned on Wikipedia, qualified in doubles for an ATP tennis tournament last year. So, you know, he's fit, still got those quick feet. So they're just going to keep things rolling.
Wow. I think Maldini definitely angling to be the oldest guy in this lineup. He's 50 years old.
Oh, I have a player who is significantly older than him in this lineup.
Can't wait for that pick. All right, I got Golden Ball winner Fabio Cannavaro and Carlos Puyol, who's still only 40.
Wow, he's 40?
I have Puyol as my right back.
Oh wow, that's
I'm going to side with Mike because he's just breaking the rules and he's doing whatever the fuck he wants. And I like this.
I think having an all-Italian pairing is a good idea.
Yeah,
I like Cannavaro, but going for different countries it's dangerous. You want that all-Italian. So Mike gets the center backs with
Maldini and Nesta.
And Nesta. All right, left back.
I got Gabriel Heinze, former Manchester United, Real Madrid player, very solid, still only 41. Just a solid left back. That's who I got.
Is this some kind of like weird pick where you're just setting yourself up to like pick yourself in 8 years or something?
He's a player who was like player of the year for Manchester United and then went on to play for Real Madrid just because he's a left back and doesn't get the credit that some other people, you know, other positions get. You know, I think he's a great player.
All right, Mike, prove him wrong.
I've got Cafu. I like Cafu because he balled it early. I appreciate that. So it's not going to be an issue for him on this back line of some really nicely haired people. He's going to be kind of like your workhorse. You know, you've got Puyol, Nesta, and Maldini are all very well-haired men. And he's just going to make things up in that left spot. Left back spot.
He's a right back.
Cafu?
First of all, he's a right back. Second of all, he's 48 years old. That's why I picked Heinze, because he's 41. But whatever. I'll let the jury decide.
All right, fine. Then we'll put Puyol at left back. Doesn't matter.
No, you drafted a right back and left back. You're playing inside out. That's fine.
Yeah, it's a new tactical thing. In this day and age, he would have been playing left back.
Palmer, what's the call?
I genuinely like Cafu, and I was thinking about if I was to actually participate in this draft, I was going to somehow pick him. So I'm gonna take Cafu, and I also like his acting. He's a very good actor.
Well, I didn't know he acted.
I didn't know that either.
Wasn't he the one that for the famous dive? When he got
that kind of acting
at him?
No, that was Rivaldo.
You're thinking of Rivaldo.
Oh, that was Rivaldo. Never mind. Well, I'll take Cafu anyway.
I thought you meant that he was in a movie.
No.
Yeah, no.
Maybe. Okay. I don't know.
Right back.
All right.
Mike. So since I've got Puyol still.
Oh, you got
still Puyol.
Only 40. He's only 40. He's going to be getting up and down that line. He's going to be running by these old people.
Oh, yeah, but we're obviously... Now that you have picked Cafu at left back, we're playing inside out with these defenders. So I'm picking Roberto Carlos.
You don't have to do that on both
sides. Picking Roberto Carlos, baby. Come on.
All right, that's fine.
If that's how we're going to play, I'm staying with your tactics.
I'm siding with Colin on this one.
All right, I obviously would have picked Tony Hibbert there, but he's only 38.
Oh, not qualified. Center mids. The arrangement of the center mids, we're going to let the free market decide. So we'll just start picking center mids. And see how they fall out. Colin, who's your first center mid pick?
My first center mid pick. Again, I've really slanted my team towards players that are like just right at 40 so that they're still, a little bit more mobile than in 5 or 10 years. So I'll say Frank Lampard. He's 40. He didn't play all that long ago. He was actually quite effective in MLS, though NYCFC fans didn't like him very much. He scored a bunch of goals there. I think he'd still score goals for this team.
I'd like to just say that I assume that every English player who retires, except for the person I'm about to pick, just goes hard on the lager. So I assume Frank is.
I have David Beckham as well at right mid. I thought we were picking center mids.
My bad.
What a shit show. All
right,
if you've turned in 15 minutes into this pod, if you've turned in, you can just turn it off at this point.
All right. I mean, look, to be fair, a little more peek behind the curtains. Initially had 4 picks prepared. Now we have to do more. I'm just a little razzled here. A little frazzled. All right, my center mids. My first center mid is Gattuso. He's just gonna destroy Frank Lampard. Just freaking absolutely murder him. He had a quote today, which is what made me think of him. He's the coach now, I think, for AC Milan, and he had a quote about how he's gonna kidnap Gonzalo Higuain so he doesn't move to Chelsea.
Wow. I move that we accept both Gattuso and Lampard and leave the one center midfield so you guys can decide how to finish the center midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm good with that. All right. I like both of these picks. I like Fat Frank in there.
He's skinny, I think, actually, these days.
Not for long. Yep. Even better. Not after you drink 7 lagers every day.
Mike, who's your third center midfielder?
My next pick is Pavel Nedved, more attacking center midfielder, very classy player. After he retired, he decided he wanted to get into running marathons, so you know he's going to be very fit. He's going to be running way past Fat Frank, You know, a lot of late runs into the box, a lot of long, windy dribbles. So yeah, he's gonna be linking attack and defense.
I like that. I like that, Colin.
Yeah, I'll just go for a better player than that. I'll go with Zidane, who's just you know, a better attacking midfielder, and you know, he's still only 45. He's still involved in the game. We've seen him on the sidelines. He's not fat yet.
He's ripping trousers.
I'll take Zidane any day.
He's ripping trousers for sure.
You don't rip trousers if you're not fat. That's all I'm saying.
We're taking Zidane.
I'm taking Zidane.
I mean, that's a boring pick. I like that's the a pick, boring but... pick, but it's fine.
Yeah, but it's the right
pick. I mean, everyone could have picked Zidane, so that's fine. Deliberately chose not to pick
him. I agree, but that's because it's correct. All right. Mike
this
wants
is how
Beckham.
I felt last week, Mike. That's how I felt last week.
Mike wants Beckham on the right wing. Colin, who do you have on the right wing?
Oh, yeah, Beckham.
Okay, oh, we agree.
I said him first, so I win that one.
Left wing, left side, left attacker?
Left midfield, I have... okay, left midfield. So you got Beckham on the right. That is more of a true midfielder. For the left side, I'm going to go a little asymmetrical here. Somebody who likes to come down the left and finish with their right foot, Thierry Henry.
Okay, we're not going to shout at Colin for taking Thierry Henry, who played as a center striker.
As a midfielder?
We're just going to be weird. Just going to pretend that he's a left midfielder now.
He can play as a winger, like a.
I mean, he's Thierry Henry. He can probably do whatever he wants, but
he can play as more than a target man. Come on,
Mike. This is simple. Just make a better pick, and we'll take yours.
I'm taking Thierry Henry's buddy, Robert Pires. Classy player, also an inverted winger, but actually knows how to do it. So yeah,
I'll go with Mike because Mike's just getting so spicy right now, and I like it.
Here's another good reason to go with Mike. 10 players picked. We're at 5-5.
Wow.
Ooh. Womp womp. Yeah. We need a striker, ladies and gentlemen. Mike, who's your striker?
I got Ruud van Nistelrooy. He's a classic poacher. Doesn't require a lot of speed. He's just going to be where the ball is and where the defenders aren't. He's going to be knocking in those golden ball crosses.
That's a good pick. Never dependent on his physical abilities.
If you don't go with me on this one, Pedro Gomez is coming to your door. Because I'm picking Didier Drogba. He is 40 years old. He just retired. He's in shape to play.
Yeah, but we know what his
He's
level
so
is.
He's so good that He's he couldn't USL. Lead a USL team to a championship. That's how good he is right now.
That's a thing.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I just still think he's in better shape than Ruud van Nistelrooy today.
I like Didier.
Oh, man. This is so tight because I would have taken the other.
we could do coach for the tiebreaker.
Oh, I don't have a coach.
All right, I like that. The rule for coach was that they have to be under 40, though, right?
Yeah.
Swap it. All right, Mike, who's your coach?
Oh God, I don't have one.
I need to look up his name real quick. Dominic Tarasco, Tedesco, the guy German. For Schalke, who's like 33 years old.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Sean McVay.
Yeah, I was going to pick Sean McVay.
I have no idea who that is.
Sean McVay is 32. I know that. I just read that the other day.
Is that like an NFL coach or something?
Yeah, it
is. Coaches the Rams. He's very young. Knows the shit.
You could have it.
Man manager.
You know, the only coach I could ever pick in a draft is Marcelo Bielsa. So he's ineligible. So I picked him.
He's in a little bit of hot water right now.
Does he have kids?
No, Eddie Howe. We're not going to take Eddie Howe. I feel like he's under
41. I just looked him up.
Old fart.
All right. Looks like I'm managing this team.
Yes.
Palmer's in. Check his birth certificate.
Is Palmer still under 40?
Debatable.
In teacher years, no. All right. We're taking Ruud van Nistelrooy up top because we have the hope that his ceiling is above USL level. sorry, Pedro Gomez, but we know exactly what Drogba's level is. And that gives Mike the win with 6 players.
Wow. That's
Frido
a
in goal, Roberto Carlos on the right, Maldini and Nesta in the middle, Cafu on the left, Beckham, Gattuso, Lampard, Zidane, and Perez with Ruud up top. And that is your retired over 40 testimonial team. As picked by the thread.
Wait, you did well give done, Mike. You really gave Mike the the points for Beckham because he set him first?
I don't know. Did I miscount? So you want to tie 5-5?
I'm just saying, if you count it correctly, that would be what I have myself as having 6 on my sheet. No, I have 5. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, fine. 5-5.
Whatever.
I don't care.
Let
the listeners decide.
There you go.
If they haven't stopped listening by now.
Yeah, we got
it. Just let it go. You lost fair and square.
I'm not even listening by now.
Mike, emails?
Emails indeed. We got a trilogy of emails from Raymond Orozco. Probably don't have time to get into everything, but some good stuff here. A lot of questions and thoughts on MLS. So Raymond, I'd say his MLS fandom is similar to ours, where he's following the league. He wants to see the league grow, but he doesn't really see how MLS is going to catch up to bigger leagues in world soccer, just because the league is behind right now. And just thinking about other businesses, he doesn't see how MLS is gonna grow. And so he wants our thoughts on where we think MLS is going to be 20 years from now. And what we think, in his words, the biggest threat to MLS is, if it's emerging leagues in Asia, if it's European soccer, if it's other soccer in the Americas. So, Colin, you like to pontificate. What do you think about all this?
I was going to say, these emails really were, rambling pontification, which is just right up my alley.
So spicy.
Some senses that stood out to me, and you've underlined, actually. He says, I just don't think how the current system, I'm not a businessman or an economist, but if you look at things from a business perspective, in what industry does the little guy ever catch the big guy? I would say in every industry that happened. The little guy always catches the big guy because the big guy stopped innovating, and the little guy comes along with a different perspective and is able to steal the big guy's lunch money because they're doing the things the old way. So, that's your classic. Your Amazon is selling a lot more books these days than Barnes and Noble or whatever you want to say. They were once the little guy. But anyway, so I think MLS can do that. I think MLS is great advantage in the way that, in this, crap analogy I'm making, Amazon's advantage was the internet. MLS's great advantage is that they are the league in the largest world economy. The United States is the largest world economy still. So if they were the most dominant sport in the United States, they would also be the most dominant world soccer league. So I think that's a better measuring stick for the MLS, honestly, is to keep catching up with NHL, NBA, et cetera, and think about how they're going to grow their market in American fans, rather than how they're going to compete necessarily with other teams on the world scale. If we had in MLS 20 or 25 franchises that looked like Atlanta United, MLS would be a very, very different league, So basically, I think they need to keep being smart about supporting their franchises in big markets and learning things from teams like Atlanta United to say, why did that succeed in Atlanta? How can we keep it succeeding in Atlanta and grow kind of on that basis?
Do you think usually like a little guy or a startup, they try to come into an industry and like the keyword is disrupt it.
Yeah.
Do you think the MLS is almost doing the opposite of that by using a more stable growth strategy? Whereas maybe the best hope for the U.S. for MLS to actually become the best league in the world is that the other leagues kind of burn themselves out through overspending, through poor financial management, through failure to pay their players, so their players go to look for something more stable. Is the MLS almost providing the opposite of disruption in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, I there's something to that. I think, like, we've talked about this before, that there's been times when like the Colombian league is really struggling financially and all of a sudden a bunch of Colombians come to MLS.
Yeah.
And yeah, I totally think you're onto something there. That being said, I don't think that that's like what drives growth in MLS. I think what drives growth is the growth of the fan base and things like that. And I think so the way MLS needs to think about disrupting is to provide a better TV product, and not just a better TV product than English Premier League, because they're not exactly a head-to-head competitor with them. As we talked about actually on last week's pod, those games aren't on at the same time. They need to disrupt or find a competitive advantage against the NHL or Major League Baseball, something like that, and say, why should I go to spend my money going to an MLS game or spend my time watching MLS on TV rather than Major League Baseball?
Mic up the refs. That's what we want.
Yeah, stuff like that. Exactly. Mic up the refs. Give me that like Fox glowing hockey puck, whatever. I don't know.
Well, I think MLS's disruption when you compare it to other soccer leagues is that they have a lot of sort of central power. It's not club-based power. It's more like league power. Yeah. And there's also a lot more parity. So you can argue whether or not parity is good, but MLS is definitely providing that. If you're a fan of a team, like there's a legitimate shot that your team could win a championship, I think, in the beginning of most years. And you definitely can't say that in most leagues. So I don't know if that's going to get people more excited or less excited, but it's definitely something that's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a different product for sure.
Yep. All right. Good email, Raymond. Next email is from George Robbins. He didn't like us ragging on Andy Carroll, mediocre, over-the-hill Premier League player. But he did think that Andy Carroll could be a fun player to come to MLS, a guy who's, you know, a little bit past his prime, but a bit of a name player and can come in and make an impact. He wants to know what player, you know, potentially a Premier League player or a player who spent a lot of their time in Europe, you'd like to see in MLS. Ryan Palmer, any thoughts on this?
So he's got to be like older, kind of.
Probably on the.
Coming to the end of his career.
Yeah, probably on the downhill side of his career.
Oh, man. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. You know, I think. Like, I think it would be amazing if, like, Messi eventually comes here. Like, how wild would that be? But he's
still playing a lot of games, right? For Barcelona.
You know,
still cracking that first team.
He's still pretty good. Yeah.
Dan, any thoughts?
Yeah. Moussa Dembele was recently sold to China for a not exorbitant fee of like £9 million or something like that. This is a guy that, to me, he's an amazing player. He's still, you watch him, he passes the eye test. He's been playing a lot. So he's, you know, he's older, but and he's got miles on his legs, but he could be a really dominant center midfielder in MLS, and he's not playing a lot for Spurs right now. I would love to see Dembele coming to MLS instead of going to China.
I mean, that'd be great, but he's not getting butts in seats. I thought that was the question.
Yeah.
No one's coming to see Moussa Dembele.
Is Andy Carroll? I don't think that's the question.
No, I think
George's butt in the seat, that's for sure.
I think that with Andy Carroll, you'd hope that you could pay him less than the £9 million is something like $14 million, which is pushing the MLS record transfer fee. And I agree with Palmer that that's not like going to be paid for somebody who is old and also not a name. You can be young and not a name, but you can't be old and not a name and get that command that in MLS.
All right. So who do you want to see come then?
Who do I want to see coming? I was glad that you took this one because I don't really have one.
Yeah, that's a hard question.
It's a hard question. Yeah. There's not a lot of like old players like that who I would actually be excited for them to come to MLS. I would say like when a good example is Frank Lampard. He came to MLS. He scored a lot of goals. He's a big name. I don't know. I'm just not excited by players like that anymore. Zlatan is such a personality. So that's why he was fun to have come to MLS. But I mean, if Andy Carroll comes, I'm not going to be excited about Andy Carroll coming. So, but will he make an impact in MLS? Yeah, he could. Sure.
So I think, Palmer, you had the wrong Barcelona guy. I think there's been a lot of talk about Luis Suarez potentially moving on from Barcelona. They were trying to get Griezmann last summer. Couldn't get him. But you could see Suarez leaving Barcelona this summer. And him and MLS would be fantastic, just biting people, scoring lots of goals.
Wow. He would be so good against MLS defenses.
Yeah, yeah. He would tear up MLS.
He'd have 50 goals.
There's your disruption, though. Let biting be legal in MLS.
You get like
only league in the world.
You get three bites per season or something. Like, you can't bite people whenever you want, but you have a certain amount of biting that's allowed.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, you only get suspended on your fourth bite. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. George also sent us a link to a book. It's called The Numbers Game: Why Everything You Know About Soccer Is Wrong, and suggest that we start a thread book club. I'd just like to point out,
it's a very startup. That feels like we're getting pitched at a startup. it fits right in with the disruption.
I mean, I feel pretty confident already that everything I know about soccer is wrong, so I don't need a book to tell me.
I don't need a book. I don't need a book.
You got a whole book, jeez.
And everything George knows too, if he's been listening to this podcast.
Yep. Yep. Great email, George. Ben here.
Red Book Club is a good idea. Let's do it.
Ben Pearson sent in a couple emails. First one, he's just giving a shout out to Super Producer Cliff for an excellent outtakes section on last week's pod, which initially I was like, well, this is fantastic. That means that at least one person made it all the way through the pod. But then I remember that I myself sometimes just only listen to the outtakes. So I'm not sure if that's what Pearson was going for also.
Straight for dessert.
Yeah, I mean, why not? So sweet. Pearson also thought I had the best picks in last week's draft. So nice little win for myself. and then he had a little more meaty email, which is talking about the MLS draft, which was earlier this week, and also the state of college soccer. The Union, Colin, your Philly Union, traded all of their draft picks, basically saying there's not a lot of quality in this draft. And so Pearson wants to know, you know, are the Union off base here? Is college soccer really that bad? Does the NCAA fall into your category of grassroots? Just a lot going on here. Dan, what are your thoughts on kind of the state of college soccer right now?
I think that the really great players aren't going to come through college. You might find MLS players that can be depth kind of guys, maybe not even starting, but like you could bring off the bench, or if your left back goes down, he can be, you know, ready to fill in for 10 games. But I don't think you're going to find really game changing or team changing, franchise changing players coming out of college. That doesn't mean that it's worthless. You need guys to fill out your roster. So that's fine. But I also have no problem with Philly deciding that they'd rather have allocation money and trade their picks away. That's fine. Like these picks have a value in the market and they got market value for them. And that's fair. Whatever. That's fine. You know?
Yeah. I think for a team like Philly that has a really strong academy also, they've got plenty of other young players to bring through. They don't have to necessarily take a punt on another young guy. They got plenty of other young guys to take a punt on.
Also interesting that because like 1.5 generations of GM ago for Philly, our stated strategy was to build through the draft. And so now this is very much distancing ourselves from the last regime to be like, we are not building through the draft. We just don't even give a shit about it. We're not going to watch.
There you go. Aren't there a lot of guys that if you're homegrown, you don't go through the draft either because teams already have dibs on you? So like the draft is a strange mechanism at this point.
There's some gems in there though.
And again, that doesn't mean there's nothing there, but
Jack Harrison scored a goal for Leeds United this weekend or this midweek. He was a guy who's number one pick in the draft. So yeah. There's some players.
And a lot of those homegrown guys do play a year or two of college. But I did see some takes on Twitter. I don't know if this is actually going to happen or not, but that this could be the last year of the draft, just because teams don't really value it that much. So we'll see what the future of the MLS draft is. I mean, I think college soccer is going to have a future for at least a few more years, but things may evolve.
And that means guys would just kind of become free agents essentially and be able to entertain offers from anyone when they decide they want to go pro.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah, I guess so. Or maybe there'll be some kind of allocation order. Or, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure MLS will find a weird way to figure it out.
Who's the last guy that was like a Dempsey to me is the last guy I can think of that came through college that was a you know, huge star or like a massive player for the U.S. men's national team. Is that the last guy to do it? I mean, that was 15, 20 years ago. 15, maybe?
DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah. Stefan went to college for a couple of years.
Nagby did, I guess. He's not like, you know, whatever. Yeah. But
there's definitely guys who are involved and look to be involved going forward who are college players. But
yeah, I feel like there's usually like the top three or four guys in the draft are kind of that ilk, and then after that, there's a pretty hard drop off of like a few guys who maybe just played a freshman year, 2 years, and are really quite good players, Yedlin level players or whatever, maybe not, but are really pretty good. And then after that, there's roster filler like Dan's talking about.
I just, the model for soccer doesn't really lend itself to playing college soccer and then getting drafted. I mean, you got kids that are making their professional debut at like 16, 17, 18 years old. And it's not an emphasis in soccer to go to college and
Yep.
The emphasis is develop with the team, getting a good academy. So develop those academy systems, those homegrown systems. And, you know, the draft is not like something like it is in the NBA, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like something has to happen weird with your development to end up in the draft. Like Andre Blake, he's from Jamaica. So he didn't, you know, he wasn't part of it, part of the system. And then he came to the US. And so that's why he got drafted. Jack Harrison, kind of same thing, coming from England. Like you have to be kind of a one-off. You're not like a kid who grew up in the US and just coming through the pipeline. It's not the structure anymore.
Yep. All right. Great emails this week. Thanks, guys. Soccerthread@gmail.com is where you can tell all of us how I won this week's draft, just like I won last week's draft.
I'm actually curious who people would like to see come to MLS also. Back to George's email. So give us ideas about that, too.
Yep. Yep. Cristiano Ronaldo may be coming to the U.S., but not to play in MLS. If you haven't seen those rumors, he is under a lot of investigation for some pretty serious allegations. But we won't get into that right now.
Yeah, we don't want to bring you down with that.
Yeah.
So this pod is sad enough.
It's already quite a sad pod. Palmer, something to make you happy, though. Arsenal 1-0 loss yesterday to George Robins' West Ham United.
Yeah, that was nice.
That's got to be probably a highlight of your weekend, yeah?
It's not the best thing that has happened to me this weekend, but, you know, it's not the worst thing either. So, you know, it's good. It's mediocre. I'm happy to see them lose. I'm always happy to see them lose.
Yep.
If Spurs would have maybe even drawn today, I would be even happier to see them lose. But
yep. You know, and I personally love that. So the goal from this is 1-0. Declan Rice, young 19-year-old, with the goal. I love that the assists for this came from Samir Nasri, who just signed for West Ham, former Arsenal player, kind of left there with a lot of beef. I'm sure the fans really hate him. So I fully enjoyed this. Colin, it kind of seems like the honeymoon for Emery is over at this point, and we're just back to the same old Arsenal.
The honeymoon is over. He still has a lot of building to do, or rebuilding, or whatever you want to say. A lot of the players on this team right now aren't his guys. So I'm not saying that Emery should be judged at this point, but certainly maybe not the magical start. The magical start is certainly over. They're now even on points with Manchester United at 41, and they're both teams sixth off that fourth place trophy that Arsenal covets so much. So yeah, definitely looking less like a magical first season for Emery.
That is crazy to me because Arsenal seem like they're doing so well. They had that huge unbeaten run. United have been in turmoil basically the whole season until Mourinho got fired. And the fact that they're now even on points just really shows how narrative a lot of times is just totally disentangled from facts.
Something we make up. Yeah.
Well, they went on an unbeaten run, but they didn't collect a lot of points. We said that at the time too, right? They were, 23 games unbeaten and still in fifth place. So, you know, they didn't capitalize even though they weren't losing.
Yep. All right, so next game, Burnley 2-1 over Fulham. Fulham actually had three goals in this game, and the first one of them was quite tasty. Andre Schürrle with a half volley. Did either of you guys see this? Any of you guys see this?
I did see this. When I saw this, I thought, well, this is what I kind of expected from him when he signed for them or whatever. It's a player that I thought at some points in his career was going to be a world-class player. So you know he has it in him, but he doesn't perform on a weekly basis, but absolute magic on that goal.
Yeah, it was like an incredible first touch to take the ball down over his head, and then his second touch was just the volley upper 90, just
ripped into the top
far corner. It was very impressive. And then the sign of a struggling team, two own goals for them to lose it. Dan?
I also liked these two own goals were like within 2 minutes of each other, and both were crossed by the same Burnley player, like low across the box and just bounce off someone's shin and go in. So much so that it felt like this was the plan for Burnley. Like they were like, we don't really have strikers. Just hit it low across the box, whether we have a guy there or not. We'll go with that. And it worked.
Well, the second one was a fantastic far post header, or it was a near post header to the far post from the Fulham defender. Just really excellent technique there. Just happened to be going in the wrong direction.
Did we mention that Burnley won this game without a shot on goal?
No, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. That is Palmer with the stats.
Wow. Yep, they won this game with no shots on
goal. Who are you and where's Ryan Palmer?
Yeah, that's my favorite stat ever.
Palmer, seemed like Ranieri got a couple decent results to start with, but now we're just seeing more of the same. Is there any hope for Fulham here?
Fulham don't look good. They're not very good, and I think they'll probably be heading back down, which is weird because I feel like they have some talent on the team that they shouldn't be as bad as they are, but yeah. They will be going down.
Yeah. Mitro's looked so good, and Schürrle scored a goal like this. Yep. It's so weird just to know that they're probably going
down. And they've got Sessegnon, that young left back / left winger who's like one of the best English players, and yeah, it kind of...
Yeah, he hasn't been that good this year, but yeah.
I mean, anytime you're losing to a team that doesn't register a shot on goal, that's a bad sign for you, I think.
Is that not good?
great analysis. Love it.
Palace lose at home 2-1 to Watford. Colin, your boy, you were actually just kind of shitting on Tom Cleverley today, but he had a lovely volley finish to give Watford the lead, or actually to give them the win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm shitting on Tom Cleverley. Tom Cleverley is a certain type of player. Like, he's an English center midfielder who people had great hopes for and is, you know, did not fulfill them. Like, whatever. There's no shame in that. He's still a Premier League player. But, yeah, he does pop up with great technical quality once a season or something like that. And this was that, like, hip-high, like, crap version of the Zidane volley into the top corner. So, yeah, great finish from him. And this was a wild game. There's also, like, a couple plays from Watford. One that I remember where De Lofeo makes a great run through the Palace defense and hits it off the post, and the rebound goes right to another player for Watford, and he hits it off that same post, like basically on the same spot of the post. So this was even though it's a game that like is kind of mid-table, not worth watching, it was a wild one. It's fun.
Palace with an incredible goal mouth scramble to get their goal as well. If you haven't seen that and you enjoy a goal mouth scramble,
the highlights from this one are out.
Mike loves a goal mouth scramble.
I mean, who doesn't? It's just comedy in soccer form, which is basically what I enjoy about the game.
Mike, keep going.
All right. I'm just going to keep on keeping on over here. I feel like, you know, promotion day and CEO is just sitting over my shoulder as I'm giving a presentation or something.
Giving you the reins.
Liverpool win away at Brighton. Salah wins another penalty. This one I think was legit and then converts it. What I don't understand, Palmer, is that he gets the ball in the box. He's one-on-one with a defender. He has the ball for a really long time, and none of his center defenders come over even to sort of shade him a little bit, to sort of cut his angles. And then he just, you know, if you give him enough time, he dribbles around someone and eventually draws the penalty. I mean, how do you defend a player like Salah, particularly in the box, when you know that he's, you know, often looking for a penalty?
I mean, is your claim that Salah is often looking for a penalty?
Yeah, that's a statement.
I mean,
I think
he's winning a lot of penalties.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And some of them are legit. I mean, I think this was definitely a penalty, but you know, I think all world-class strikers are looking to win a penalty if they can't get a shot off easily.
Especially in this situation where like Mike says, the run of play kind of gets stopped and he's like kind of stuck in the box. There's a bunch of guys in the box. He's not going to get a clear, easy goal out of it, right? He'd have to dribble through like five guys. So if that guy gets close to him, yeah, he would like to trip over his leg. Thank you very much.
So, I mean, so then how do you defend that, Colin? Because I don't know how you defend that. I feel like you just keep...
Very tough. I agree with Mike that you need to bring another guy and just try to stay in front of him. You can't stay in front of a player like Salah or, you know, obviously Messi or whoever. Eden Hazard, definitely not. Wilfried Zaha loves to do this. But you can't just stand in front of them and mirror that play like mirror defense on them. They're quicker than you. That's you're setting yourself up for failure.
It just seems like you would be backing your way up onto the goal line anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At some point you got to stand your ground, and that's going to end up you're going to probably stick your foot out.
Yeah.
I don't know. The answer I was looking for is basically you have to get two players on Salah, and obviously you have a lot of other talented players in Liverpool, but he's definitely your most talented player, and leaving him one-on-one is not a good idea.
Make him pass the ball.
Yep. Saints with a nice little away win, 2-1 at Leicester. Colin, Shane Long, he hasn't scored very many goals, but he got one for the Saints even after they went a man down. Saints, I feel like, are on a nice little run of form. We were kind of saying that they were definitely going down not long ago. They're now up to 16th spot. And Leicester kind of struggling. They had a couple nice wins over the Christmas break, but followed up with a couple losses. Did you have a chance to see this one?
Yeah, I saw some of it. I completely agree with you that Southampton look, I don't know, like they're trying again. So I think they're another team that have enough quality that they should be able to, you know, scrape by. But they do need some breaks. In this one, both goals were the fault for me of one Pepe Mendy, who gave up one silly PK and then had the mistake allowing Shane Long to go around him. Pepe Mendy is a 26-year-old center defensive midfielder who is the cousin of a footballer, but it is not the one you're thinking of. You know who it might be?
I know it's not Benjamin Mendy, it sounds like.
Not Benjamin.
Yep. He's the cousin of Baphom Tembi Gomis. Oh. You might remember playing for Swans. Does the
what was his celebration like, called?
Lion goal celebration.
The Panther, yeah. I think it is.
I love that celebration.
Yeah, where he's like crawling around the goal. He's got really long dreadlocks and he crawls on the ground after he scores goals.
I missed that. I missed that one. That's an excellent celebration. Moving along, Chelsea with a 2-1 home win against Newcastle. Chelsea not looking that impressive. Dan, I don't know if you had a chance to see this, but it seems like Chelsea are kind of running out of ideas going forward. And Sarri was supposed to be this, you know, attacking genius. And now it just seems like they're kind of relying on Hazard to do something here and there. You know, what are your thoughts on Chelsea and how many goals is CP to God going to score next year for that team?
I mean, a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week, said that I wasn't convinced that Pulisic would get a lot of minutes, but actually he might be exactly what this team needs. Colin has pointed out before that they're not playing any of their strikers. So Sarri obviously it does not have a lot of confidence in whatever's happening going forward. You know, Hazard can only do so much. Pedro actually with a nice goal in this game, for like very, very direct ball straight over the top from David Luiz, but not really a possession Sarri type goal. But I agree with you. It just seems like they're out of ideas and they need some fresh blood. And Pulisic, you know, might be exactly what they need. So I'm a little more optimistic than I was last week or whenever I was feeling pessimistic. So
yeah, they just didn't look like they had any ideas as far as how to break down the team. And I don't know, they looked like they could use a god in their team.
The Pedro's goal was exactly the type of goal that gets scored when you have no ideas. It's just literally center back chips the ball 40 yards straight up the middle of the goal, and Pedro happens to like get around the opposing center back for it. There's nothing interesting about this goal. I mean, I suppose it's a good ball from David Luiz, right? But like, this is not something that they were coached on. It's not an idea that they're getting off the training ground. So
it was a good ball. It was also a really great touch. I mean, there was some interesting things in this, but
I'm really shitting on this goal.
It wasn't like the beautiful idea football. In terms of having ideas, this isn't like, all right, guys, here's what we're going to do. Right. Like, yeah, it was well executed by two. I don't know if world class is the right word. Right. But like two very good players, well executed. But there's nothing interesting in terms of tactics about this.
Man, you sound very snobby as you say that.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't want to get into that argument.
Chelsea gets a win. They're short on ideas. They get a win over Newcastle, who's you know, not great, but in a week where a lot of other teams that are hoping to be top four are losing, Chelsea get a win. So good for them.
Very popular pick and streaks as well this week, so making a lot of our listeners and actually I think everyone on this thread quite happy. Colin, you're Everton with what looked like a routine 2-0 win at home today against Bournemouth. Zuma and Calvert-Lewin with the goals. Digne seems to be firmly established as the next Leighton Baines. You've got to be feeling pretty good about yourself.
I mean, I don't feel that great about the team in general, but I feel good about today. I feel good that people are mistaking me for Ryan Palmer. That's a good start. I love that. Good cross from Digne for Zuma's goal. Pretty bad defending by Bournemouth on that one. Dinier also had a couple other really nice crosses. Like you said, it reminded me a lot of maybe 5 years ago, Leighton Baines was creating all the chances. Everything was coming down the left. That was the case in this one as well. Ademola Lookman played a lot on the right. Good to see him playing, but he was not as influential as I'd like him to, you know, I'd like to see out of them. I think we still need to strengthen in the winger spots. Lookman, Bernard, and Theo Walcott all played in this game and none impressed. So, you know, it's this thing where if your it's great that your defenders are providing some offense, but if your defenders are your best attackers, it says something about your attackers.
All right. Fair enough. There is one more game, Palmer. Do you want to talk about it, or should we just skip it?
I feel like I at least have to give a shout out to United, mainly David De Gea, who was absolutely incredible today. I think Spurs played insanely well. This was probably one of the best performances that I've seen from them. The way that they moved the ball, the way that they were able to possess, the quick passes that they had in the 18 to open up some pretty clear-cut chances that David De Gea was able to stop was encouraging. And we've yet to draw a game in the Premier League this season. So that is just wild. But, you know, shout out to David De Gea because he was clearly their best player today.
If this game is played in the new Spurs stadium, how many goals do Spurs win by?
Probably lose by four.
Daniel Levy out.
Colin.
I was gonna say I have long held that De Gea is the best keeper in the world and that he should have been going to Madrid instead of Thibaut Courtois. Do you guys agree with me? I mean, I think that a lot of people will say that his feet aren't as good as some of the other guys who
he made most
he almost exclusively
not saving with his feet. I'm not talking about like
his movement.
Tim Howard with his feet. Tim Howard has great feet in that way too.
Like playing the ball out of the back.
If you want, you know, a Pep style keeper, it's David De Gea doesn't fit that mold. But for me, he's the best keeper in the world right now, and certainly showed it today.
Yeah,
he'd be my number one pick in the under 40 draft.
I think David De Gea is definitely up there. You know, he had a really bad World Cup, really bad. Like he was shocking.
Yeah.
But he's been United's best player for years. You know, I think the reason why they were able to win some games, the reason why they were able to draw some games even, were because of him. And they won today because of him. There's no question about that. So yeah, I agree with you, Colin.
I think this story here has to be about Manchester United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, this is the first game that really is a big contest, and they win it.
Six in a row.
Is he good? Do we have to, you know, we said, okay, fine, interim manager, whatever. He, quote-unquote, knows the club. Is he actually proving that he's more than just a guy that can let Pogba play, or does he have a little bit more? This is a big win.
I don't know if he did anything tactically here that was like outside of the box. I think the cloud of Mourinho and like the head games that he plays has been lifted on this team, and the world-class players that they have are able to just be world-class players. I think Pogba seems a little bit more interested. He's working hard. He's moving up and down the pitch. He was able to play in more of an advanced role. Than we saw when he was playing under Mourinho. You know, Marcus Rashford looks great. It seems like he's just allowing them, he's allowing the kids to play. And I think that is, I guess that's a tactic in and of itself, but they seem to be enjoying themselves again.
Yeah. I mean,
is Ole going to get the permanent job? That's what I really want to know.
That would be a mistake.
I know, it'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be great. I think it'd be fun to talk about. I don't think he will. I think Palmer's right on. I mean, this goal today, great pass from Pogba to Rashford, and then Rashford really, really nice finish. I mean, to run away from the player and then also finish to the far post right on the post. I mean, that's the attacking quality that Mourinho was always wishing for, like we've been saying. So, I totally agree that he's just taking the brakes off. And
That's the attacking quality that Mourinho was always wishing for. Yeah. And guess what? You had it on your team.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knew he had it the whole time. Yeah, that's not surprising. We all knew it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that he's just taking him off. And I think, like Palmer said, you know, Spurs definitely could have won this game. If David De Gea doesn't stand on his head, you know, this is maybe a 2-3-1 victory for Spurs. So it's not like United came out and dominated Spurs at Wembley. So if that had been the case, then I think I would be more likely to give Solskjaer a lot more credit. But it's definitely better than Mourinho would be doing.
I think six in a row for a new manager is also a United record.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. So,
This was also just a really fun game. Maybe not quite as good as the City Liverpool game, but it was really open, a lot of chances. You know, I think in another world where both the keepers don't play so well, because Lloris also had a few really nice saves.
Yeah, he did.
Could have been a 5-4 Spurs win or something like that. So just a really enjoyable game to watch unless you're a Spurs fan. All right. Any other thoughts on the Premier League so far? Liverpool now with a 9-point lead over Spurs and 7-point lead over City. City play tomorrow against Wolves. So obviously a lot of pressure for them to keep up.
Palmer, Spurs still in this race?
No. Are you kidding me? No. We're playing for that 4th place trophy. We're playing for the EFL trophy. That's what we're going for.
That's fair enough.
United to
fair
get enough. 4th, though?
It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. I'm going to say no, though. I think United's going to come back down to earth.
Yeah, I think so. Colin, we have a corner this week?
We sure don't. I made the run order instead of prepping a corner.
Great work.
You. And you made that crappy-ass 40-year-old
draft,
team.
Yeah.
what to watch for next week, or the coming week, rather. Arsenal hosts Chelsea next weekend, so that will be a good opportunity to see, you know, maybe two potential top four teams against one another. That's probably your paper game. Anything else, guys?
It's 53 degrees in my house. This is colder than when I used to live with super producer Cliff. I didn't know houses could be colder than that. I am freezing.
All right, go take a hot shower at a friend's house.
Yeah, warm up.
Don't light an indoor fire. That's all I'll say.
All right, thanks, Cliff.
Thanks, Cliff.
My headphones are at Dan's.
It's going to be what it is.
That's why we pay Cliff.
Definitely not what it isn't.
Thrower away of socks in the swamp, Colin Smith.
You do it. Tough guy.
Which happened. He bought me a pair of socks. He sent me a pair of socks.
I think Colin is a humorless bore.
I'm going to side with Mike because he's just breaking the rules and he's doing whatever the fuck he wants. And I like this.
Just because he's a left back and doesn't get the credit that some other people, you know, other positions get.
Oh, that kind of acting.
If you've turned in 15 minutes into this pod, if you've turned in, you can just turn it off at this point.
Deliberately chose not to pick him. Is that like an NFL coach or something? But then I remember that I myself sometimes just only listen to the outtakes.
Straight for dessert.
Let biting be legal in MLS.
Yeah, I mean, why not? So sweet.
Anytime you're losing to a team that doesn't register a shot on goal, that's a bad sign for you, I think.
Comedy in soccer form. Yeah. Why are you really shitting on this goal? All very well-haired men.
Well-haired?